Hello, I'm Nick Grimm, and thanks for joining me for this Audio Current Affairs Summer Special. Australian space observatories, their dishes, telescopes and stargazing astronomers have long been at the forefront of the search for extraterrestrial life. But soon any aliens out there might be better warned to prepare for an invasion from down under. Australia is on its way into space, if, that is, the best blue sky ambitions of the federal government can be realised. It's in the process of establishing the nation's own space agency to marshal the efforts of Aussie boffins and entrepreneurs with their hearts set on the heavens above. And as Caroline Winter found out when she shifted her gaze skywards, there's a new generation of Australians ready to delve deep into the universe.
So that's zoomed right in tight on the moon. Do you see a crack in it?
Yeah. Interesting. Oh.
When I was about 10, my dad bought a little telescope and set it up on our back patio and showed me the moon and Saturn and Mars and things like that because I was doing space in school.
Yeah, it's quite cloudy.
It's almost like drops of water, isn't it?
Mm.
And so did you fall in love with the night sky at that point?
Yeah, I really did. And, yeah, it just sort of sparked a whole interest, which is still going, I guess.
And so what was it about the stars in the sky that hooked you?
I don't know. I guess something bigger than us. There's so much out there that we don't know. I guess it was a curiosity thing as a kid, which has stayed with me.
Logan Blackwell has a passion that's out of this world. The 22-year-old's eyes sparkle as she talks about the distant celestial objects twinkling faintly in the darkness above.
We're looking at Canopus, which is the second brightest star in the night sky.
It's Saturday night at the Stockport Observatory, an hour's drive north of Adelaide. Far from the city lights, and with a population of less than 300, Stockport lures stargazers from hundreds of kilometres in every direction. They come here to marvel at the night sky.
It's a pretty basic telescope, actually. It's just point and shoot.
Logan Blackwell has pitched her telescope alongside a dozen other amateur and professional astronomers.
Oh, that's really cool. Oh, yes, that is really cool.
13-year-old Maddie Butler is looking through a telescope for the first time.
I can't get my head around it, like how we're on Earth and then there's all the other stuff. So it's really cool, it's really interesting and I'd love to learn more about it.
So I was growing up in Northern Ireland, a place that doesn't have a lot of, well, anything. What it does have is very nice dark skies when it's not raining at least.
Alan Duffy's own love affair with space began simply enough. Casting his eyes towards the heavens, not only did he wonder about the stars, but also about the inky blackness that stretched between them. The young Alan Duffy asked himself, was the darkness a lack of stars, or something blocking the starlight, or was there something invisible up there?
So I've always looked up into the night sky and just wondered what was up there. Those basic questions of the night sky is what propelled me in a career of physics, astrophysics, and now all the way around the world to Australia to conduct my research here.
Astronomer Professor Alan Duffy is, of course, our go-to guy in all things space. He joins us now.
Alan, astrophysics is Alan Duffy's purpose and passion. The Swinburne University astronomer and media commentator is in no doubt that science and space have always been sexy. But right now, he's excited that Australia is once again finding its space mojo. It has to, because the alternative doesn't bear thinking about.
Every day you use a sat-nav, your maps on your phone to get around. Every time you use an ATM, that's an underpinning security is using satellites. All of those everyday uses we just take for granted, they all use space. The difference has been that Australia hasn't had to be aware of that because we've been able to essentially freeload off other nations. That era is coming to an end. We can't be so connected with these satellites and so dependent on them without being able to control them. Fundamentally, it's a sovereign risk. Everyday people want their everyday lives to continue without interruption. Well, we need to have control of our own satellites.
Control Australia once had.
Finally, the covers were fitted, the nose cone was screwed down, and reset was ready. It was then taken to the launching area for mating to the rocket, and the whole assembly was ready for launching. Lift off.
Australia was once at the forefront of the space race. ReSat, Australia's first satellite, lifted off in November 1967. Alan Forbes was there, a pioneer in Australia's relationship with space, honoured at a 50th anniversary celebration of the landmark event.
I was a young electronic engineer and I found myself designing the basic parameters of the ReSat telemetry system and also designing and producing a very reliable link between Woomera and Oodnadatta to destroy the rocket if it got out of hand when its second stage was burning.
The Weapons Research Establishment satellite launched from the South Australian outback town of Woomera, making Australia the third nation to design and launch a satellite to orbit the Earth.
Did you know at the time the gravity of what you were doing in being pioneers in space in Australia?
Well, honestly, no. It was an interesting diversion from usual work in the lab.
ReSat circled the globe 642 times and transmitted data from the onboard scientific experiments back to Earth. But few Australians are aware of it, the achievement long lost from the public consciousness. But recently, it was marked with an exhibition dedicated to ReSat and Woomera, curated by space historian Kerry Doherty.
In this room, what are some of the objects that are on display?
My particular favourite, actually, is something that dominates the room, and that is the upper section of a Skylark sounding rocket. My other favourite object is a half-scale model of ReSat, the Weapons Research Establishment satellite, which was, of course, Australia's first satellite. A small satellite, but nonetheless, it made Australia one of the earliest nations to launch its own satellite. And that wasn't a bad achievement, only 10 years after the launch of Sputnik 1.
And did it put Australia on the map? Did it give us some sort of kudos in the space community?
Well, it gave us the kudos of being what they referred to then as a member of the space club. Unfortunately, we didn't continue the momentum that it created, again, because the government of the day, you know, was happy to have the kudos of that particular event, but they didn't have a plan or a long-term goal of developing a space program.
So somewhere along the way, Australia's space mission went awry. As other countries forged ahead, Australia went from being a world leader to, well, sort of just lost in space. Certainly that's how astrophysicist Alan Duffy sees it.
Somewhere along the way, I don't know whether we lost ambition, we lost the belief that we could be part of this exploration. We were third in space after the US and USSR to build and launch our own satellites. So it's really surprising to me that Australia didn't see the potential in space and threw away that lead. But it's never too late and the technology has changed and our return to space, I think, can be incredibly exciting for the country and useful for our everyday life.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6,
but Australians are still five, reaching towards
four,
space.
3, 2, go for main engine start. 1, 0, and liftoff of the Atlas V rocket with Cygnus and the SS John Glenn.
The leadership once shown by the government back in 1967 has now been replaced by entrepreneurs like Matthew Tetlow.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was such a, it was obviously the exciting part of it, the part that we have absolutely no control over, of course, because it's just someone else is pushing the buttons there. But it was great that, you know, that we, to know that the thing that we made was on its way up to space. So, you know, it was great.
For this space engineer, watching his team's CubeSat, or mini-satellite, blast off from Cape Canaveral in Florida as part of a global European-funded project was a career highlight.
Space is very exciting. It's a very difficult, a challenging environment to operate in, to build things in. I don't know. It's just, I mean, space has an appeal that almost no other industry does, you know.
Matthew Tetlow established Adelaide-based Innovor Technologies in 2012. The company builds satellite platforms for space applications like navigation, communication, weather, and Earth observation. It's one of around 60 startups nationally which have gone it alone, raising capital privately to get off the ground, and without the funding, networking, or overarching support that comes with a national space program.
The small satellite revolution has been happening internationally for a long time, and it's only now that people are in Australia starting to realise that it actually is happening and that we can actually participate. The cost base has come down, which means that Australia can now play in this space. And then you quickly realise that the skills that a lot of people have are the ones that you need. You know, it's fundamental science, physics, fundamental maths. There's nothing 1,000 students, you know, a year don't study. That's basically the skills that you require.
And that, Matthew Tetlow says, starts in the classroom.
Good morning, and welcome to your final briefing. In a little less than 10 minutes, you'll be leaving Earth. Your destination is the planet Mars.
This is Space School.
Counting 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Alana, can you please go to southeast and see if there's any radiation over there? Because what I'm seeing, there is lots of radiation.
Dressed in a blue NASA flight suit, headset in place, Mission Director Chelsea Long is helping astronauts on Mars navigate the rough terrain. Here at Hamilton Secondary College in Adelaide South, a purpose-built facility has been set up with its own mission control and replica Mars crater. There are only two facilities like this in Australia, and for students like Lauren Almore, it makes learning an out-of-this-world experience.
I've enjoyed the like hands-on parts of it. It's a lot easier to learn hands-on than it is to learn by the book.
And what kind of skills do you need to be involved?
You need some basic math skills, but how to work out all the problems. They give you a sheet so you know how to work them out. You just like add the numbers in there and then you can work the calculations out.
And is it a lot of team building that go into this?
Yeah, definitely. You have to work as a team to make sure that nobody like gets killed on the surface and that everyone comes off before anything bad happens.
And so do you have an interest in space and science?
Yeah, I'm actually studying physics, and that's why I enjoy physics, because it's learning about space, learning about Mars.
Is space or the space industry something that you're interested in for your future?
I definitely would want to go to space, maybe not Mars, but I think maybe the moon would be very exciting to go to.
What an exhibit like this can do is it can show kids and young people that you can actually have a lot of fun with technical subjects, with mathematics and science. You can really do some great things, and you know, you can explore a planet. How cool is that?
One of those to help get Space School off the ground is Australia's own astronaut, Andy Thomas, who in a 22-year career with NASA departed this planet on 4 missions. He says Australian kids have all the tools they need to set them up for promising careers in the future.
Oh, the times have changed, I have to say, when I look back on my own education, how rigorous and stiff it was compared to the environment that we offer young people today, and the motivation and the excitement that they can get.
I can't really hear you. Someone has a problem. Oh, you have a problem? Can you fix the problem? Okay.
But there's concern that smart, motivated young scientists like these and entrepreneurs like Matthew Tetlow will boldly go overseas to explore the final frontier if the Australian government doesn't do more to keep them here. And that mission might have just been cleared for takeoff.
Welcome. The 68th International Astronomical Congress opening ceremony will begin in Kumurka, Pawa.
In front of 4,000 international space delegates, in a year which marked 50 years since RESAT launched and 60 years since Sputnik lifted off, another important date was added to the list.
And so I am pleased today to announce that the Australian government will be establishing a national Australian space agency.
Federal Senator Simon Birmingham delivered the words the Australian space community had been waiting to hear for decades. The announcement stripped Australia of the dubious distinction of being one of just two OECD countries without its own space agency. And Australia's defence industries are already eager to establish their own foothold in the sector, as Australia's chief defence scientist Alex Zelinsky explains.
So with defence, we've been looking about and thinking about what would be something that would improve the effectiveness of the Australian Defence Force or our security systems. And we've came to the view that our Jindalee over the horizon radar network, it depends very much on the state of the ionosphere, which is the upper atmosphere, because we bounce radio waves off that and then get the signals back. If you know the state of the ionosphere, you can run the radar more efficiently.
It's already underway. The Buccaneer was launched by a NASA rocket from the Vandenberg Air Force Base in California in November. It's hoped the joint project between the University of New South Wales Canberra and DSTO will lead to new generations of satellites and the tasks they can perform. Alex Zelinsky says a dedicated space agency will assist with that, and then some.
The key will be, I think, for us not to be a Me Too program and not to get too ambitious.
So not sending people to Mars?
Yes, exactly. I think that, or we could contribute to that, but that would have to be in partnership with others. But I think what we need to do is to say what is uniquely good for Australia. And we've got a big country here, and if you could view it from space and start to use those sort of assets, you can imagine Internet of Things or agriculture, can you observe the fields and see which areas where the crops are ready to be harvested or how the water resources are? Are we going into drought? Are we having floods, likely events? And, of course, the perennial danger in Australia summer is bushfires. So there's lots of things we could do in the civilian space, around space, I think, and as well as, obviously, in the military context.
While it's highly anticipated a space agency headquarters will be established in Canberra, other states are vying to be specialised hubs.
From South Australia's point of view, we want to be the industry node for what's going on. This is historically where it's been happening. We've got the capability, we've got the people that are motivated to pick this up and run with it.
So much so, Martin Hamilton-Smith has been appointed the South Australian Space Industry Minister. The state government recently established a space industry centre with a mission plan to grow the local space economy and create associated jobs. And with the likes of US defence and space giants Lockheed Martin, Raytheon and BAE Systems based in Adelaide, the minister says South Australia has the right friends with the right connections.
Our nation can be more than a farm, a mine and a tourist destination, important though those things are. We are a smart country, and we could be at the cutting edge of technology and a leader in the area of space. But to do that, we have to motivate ourselves and activate these extremely capable people that we have.
Motivation that's been given a rocket-sized boost, says space historian Kerry Doherty, now that a space agency is on the way.
You know, there are very sound economic reasons, there are very sound national security reasons for Australia to become more directly involved with space activities. There are many overseas countries, space agencies that would like to have Australia participate in their programs, but because we've not had a national agency, there hasn't been a body capable of being the participatory body with those other agencies.
Just how much a space agency will cost, what it will look like, and when it will be up and running are all questions that are still unknown. Those details are expected to be revealed as part of a review due out in March.
My hope is that the government will actually create a space agency that has an adequate budget, an adequate staffing, a proper authority to be able to deal on an equal basis with international programs, and that, in other words, is a space agency with teeth that, you know, that can take its place in the space agencies of the world.
The hatch is coming open. Okay. It's open.
Verified.
I'm moving outside. Okay, I'm letting go.
What is clear is that Australia stands to gain a lot. Globally, the space industry is worth $300 to $400 billion. Nationally, the sector is worth about $4 billion a year and employs up to 11,000 people. With the right government support and a dedicated agency, the Australian Space Industry Association estimates that could double within 5 years. So does it mean more Australians in space, even leaving our atmosphere aboard an Aussie-built spacecraft? Well, while it might be a tantalising prospect for stargazers like Alan Duffy, it's an unlikely one. Instead, Australia should be playing to its strengths, he argues.
A space agency doesn't mean that people are going to go to space. We're not going to have Aussie astronauts necessarily, but we're going to have a whole range of roles being created in both downstream and upstream. So that means technologies that use the images primarily from space, everything from mining to farming to fisheries, everything that needs a big eye view of Australia, that's going to be empowered and enhanced, and there's going to be plenty of jobs in that part. There's also the hardcore engineering, building these CubeSats, these new era of satellites. And I suspect that we could see as many as 10,000 new jobs created in those bleeding edge areas in the next 5 years, given the trajectory of the UK Space Agency once they finally got together and started to centralise their efforts.
But how will Australia be remembered if it fails to take its place once again in the space club it once belonged to 50 years ago?
Okay, Alana, can you please look at that particular rock right there and see how much radiation there is?
There's no lack of young talent.
Just the visual beauty of it. I like the planets, particularly Saturn and Jupiter. Also like looking at multiple stars and star clusters because you can pick out nice patterns in them, and sometimes you can see different coloured stars.
And no shortage of enthusiasm either. With the right policy and framework, there are economic opportunities, skills and jobs for the taking.
Space engineers, scientists, they are the true believers. They've worked in literal sheds building this next generation of explorers, both rockets and, for example, CubeSats, these miniature satellites. That just speaks to the new technology, 3D printing, new software, new electronics. All of these make possible the exploration of space by startups, whereas in the past it was by superpowers. That has really democratized the access to space, and that's one of the most exciting changes for me.
An Australian space agency is not only a reward for those who have fought for one for so many years, but for the future of a nation, its people, and the belief that the sky is not the limit.
I think this space agency is going to be incredibly important to have as an aspirational goal. You can see your end goal. With a target, you know what to aim for. And that means young students in school know that there's a space agency, that they could potentially work there. When you don't have something you can see to aim for, how can you possibly make your way in that direction? And I think we're going to see some very smart young people come up and do spectacular things, maybe not even within the space agency, but certainly because and inspired by that space agency.
Astronomer Alan Duffy there, ending Caroline Winter's look at Australia's race for space. Certainly it's a chance for those students at space school, and in science classrooms around the country for that matter, to start dreaming big. Exciting possibilities await those with the drive and imagination to get innovative projects off the ground, quite literally. And that's all for another Audio Current Affairs Summer Special. I'm Nick Grimm. Thanks for listening in. Goodbye.